Okay.
Should I press it already?
I just wanted to
thank my gals, first of all, for opening up their home and having the, I hope to be the first of many opportunities to share Torah. The plan is that the shirim should be scheduled for Rosh Chodesh and should be topical to the month ahead. And it should be something very special, something perhaps an idea that we can take away together to work on, you know, for the coming month, and try to be a very straightforward, solid, succinct message. And I just wanted to say, being this the first official shiur under the auspices of Anshei Chesed, the South Dominion, I just want to thank the shul for opening up the community to me and Tamara, and that we should, continue to grow and continue to see great nachas from each other, and should be the continuation of a beautiful joint effort. We sit here on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and what does Elul have to say to us? So I want to ask three questions, and through those three questions come to an idea about Elul, and then get to something more practical. The first question. Rashi, in the beginning of Devarim, says, this is in Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Ches, so Moshe discusses the idea that the Bnei Yisrael sinned by the Chet Egel, and he had to break the Luchos and go up and come down again, the whole elevator ride up and down Har Sinai. So Rashi lays out essentially what happened. Rashi, using a calendar, pretty much explains that the last 40 days, first Bnei Yisrael sinned, and that was by Tisha B'Av. And then they, that was by Shavuos Arba Tamuz. And then Moshe had to go up and daven for them, and he came down for another 40 days. And then he had to go up again for the last 40 days. And if you look at the calendar, the last 40 days turns out to be, what, Rosh Chodesh Elul, and then ending up by Yom Kippur, the 40th day ending up on Yom Kippur itself. And therefore we see that this period, leading from the last 40 days of Moshe's davening to Hashem and bringing down the second Luchos, so that begins now Rosh Chodesh Elul, leading up until Yom Kippur of Haba Aleinu L'Tova. The Chai Adam, in his introduction to Elul and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in his Klal Kuf Lamed Ches, so he says, he brings out this idea in Rash, and he says that these are Yemei Ratzon, days where we are closer to Hashem, and he and the Mishnah Berurah alike, in his introduction to Elul, brings the famous Rosh Tevos, referencing Elul, Ani L'Dodiva D'Odi Li, the fact that the last letters of that Rosh Tevos spells out the gematria of 40, and many other famous Rosh Tevos. There's a less famous Rosh Tevos that they say by the Breslov Chassidim, that Elul stands for what? Ani L'Uman V'Ishti the bias, right? I go to Uman, my wife stays home. So by us, it's not necessarily the minog, but we have many different approaches to see how we come close to Hashem during the days of Elul. And the Chai Adam points out that these 40 days are important because this is when Moshe found out about that he was going to get the second Luchos. So the first question we want to have on the Chai Adam is, shouldn't then only Rosh Chodesh Elul be a day of Ratzon? Meaning, once Moshe finds out that he's going to get the Luchos, whew, so all the pressure's off. Everything's going to turn out great. There's nothing else to worry about because I know I'm going to get the Luchos. So why are the rest of the 39 days also Yemei Ratzon? Why are we close to Hashem for the rest of the days? Because, okay, he found out he was going to get the Luchos. So what else is there to work on, right? I already know I'm going to win the game. I already know there's going to be success. There's nothing else to talk about. So why, past Rosh Chodesh Elul, do we consider these days where we are close to Hashem? The next thing about the number 40 is the Maharal. The Maharal in, actually, this week's Parsha, I think, or last week's Parsha, so in Perek Chafei of Dvarim, so he discusses the idea of 40. And he notes that if a person sins according to the Torah, and there's no designated Avera that the Torah gives to you, so you fall back, the punishment being Malchus, being lashes. And Maharal begins to ask, why is it we know that really the Torah says you get 40 lashes, but how many do we actually give? 39. We give 40 minus 1. So the Maharal asks in his Gur Aryeh, his commentary on the Torah, really commenting on Rashi. So the Maharal asks, why? Why doesn't the Torah say 40 lashes, but really we give 39? And the Maharal says, Lama kasav arba'im, velo kasav shloshim v'teisha yakenu. You should give 39, not 40. And he begins to quote from the Ramban and the commentary of the Rush, and he gives different approaches, all surrounding the idea that we have another special 40. Besides for Elul, besides for giving lashes, that 40, says the Maharal, is the Yetziras Havlad. We know that the fetus, the embryo, in order to become viable, takes 40 days from the time of conception in order to be what we consider a Vlad, to be considered something that's going to continue and to live and to create life. And therefore, says the Maharal, Ki bevadai haya roi lilkos arba'im keneged arba'im yom shel yisiras havlad. Really, the person who sins should get 40 lashes for the 40 days it took for that person to become ready to be a human being. That's what should happen. Uvayom ha'acharon, what says the Maharal? What happens on the 40th day? Hu yom arba'im mekabel havlad ha'neshama. Says the Maharal, what goes inside the mother's stomach? For 39 days, there's no neshama. There's no ruchnius, there's no spirituality. The person is just physical, being created, the cells dividing, creating that physical specimen. And on the 40th day, says the Maharal, the person gets a neshama. The Vlad receives neshama on that 40th day. Uvechol lametes hu b'riyas haguf. The first 39 are the creation of the physicality. Uvaguf hu hachait, and is the body that sins. Right, the person's neshama is pure, Elokai neshama mimal. Our neshama would never do the wrong thing. But the body is what messes up. So what happens, says the Maharal? For 39 days, that physicality gets 39 lashes. And once the person gets the 39th lash, really he should get 40. But says Hashem, no. The body has been fixed with the 39 lashes. The 40th is just the neshama. There's no guf. And therefore, says Hashem, stop. Really, there should be 40, but we're going to hold out 39 because the 39 already fit the physical body that has sinned, and the 40th day is left off. And this, says the Maharal, is why we have this idea of 40, but not really 40. It's really 40 minus 1 because the neshama of a person is really still perfect. It never sins, and therefore, we don't take the lashes all the way. Now, the first 39 malchus are for the guf, as we said, and the 40th should be for the neshama. So the first question we want to have on the Maharal is a Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara in Menachos, Tzadi Tesla Beis, says that there's a parallel between the 40 days of Kabbalah HaTorah, leading up to before the Jews got the Torah in Har Sinai, and the 40 days of from inception that the person gets neshama. Only the neshama, says the Gemara, that guards the Torah will be able to be guarded. Right? There's the connection. If you keep the Torah, then it's proper that your neshama will also be guarded. That's the connection between the 40 days leading up to the Torah and then the 40 days of the creation of the human being. Now, there's a difference between the neshama that is put in the body, according to the Maharal, on the 40th day, as opposed to Kabbalah Satorah, which is leading up. There's a process leading up to Kabbalah Satorah. So why is the Gemara comparing the creation of the human body to the Kabbalah Satorah? The creation of the human body is 39 days, nothing going on, boom, on the 40th day in the Shema. And then when it comes to the Torah, no, it wasn't nothing was going on. For Kabbalah HaTorah, the 40 days were leading up. There was a process, each day getting bigger, more in Ruchnius, more in Neshama, more getting close to Hashem. So why is the Gemara, based on what the Maharal is saying, that the Neshama only comes all of a sudden at the last moment, why is the Gemara comparing Kabbalah HaTorah to the creation of the human being and getting the Neshama? There seem to be no connection. Finally, is a question asked by Rabbi Yehoshua Hartman in his footnotes on his edition of the Gur Aryeh. And Rabbi Hartman brings from Rabbi Yosef Engel. Rabbi Yosef Engel was the last chief rabbi of Krakow before the Holocaust. There was no chief rabbi after he passed away. He was ended up being one of, if not the last chief rabbis of Krakow, an off-the-charts genius. There were very, very few people like him. He had Kol HaTorah Kula at his fingertips. But not just amazing recall. He had an uncanny ability to cross-reference the most random and unseemingly difficult and not connected parts of Torah. An amazing, amazing personality. They say that him and Reb Chaim Soloveitchik were the two biggest geniuses of the generation. No comparison between the two, compared to those two. Reb Yosef Engel has this ability, as I explained, to connect different areas. And he was a master of the Maharal. He felt the Maharal of Prague was his Rebbe in Hashkafa. He felt he learned a tremendous amount from the Maharal of Prague. So Reb Yosef Engel wrote a sefer called the Beis HaOtzer, the house of, it was like a storehouse. His goal was to make an encyclopedia of everything that was going on in his head. Now, the Beis HaOtzer, he only got to the middle of letter Beis. It was already two huge volumes. He died before he finished it. He only got to the middle of Os Beis. It was already like 500 pages by that point. So in his Beis HaOtzer, he discusses, this is his Maracha Aleph, Klal Yud. So he asks a question based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ansari Aleph Amid Beis, has a conversation between Antonidas and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Antoninus was the Roman Caesar, and he had a conversation with Rabbi. They were very good friends. There's a lot to talk about their friendship, but not for now. So Antoninus asked Rabbi the following question. He said, when is the neshama put in a person? Is it at the time of conception, when originally the egg begins to become fertilized, or is it 40 days later, when the Yetzirah HaVlad, when the Vlad is created? So Rebbe initially answered Antoninus to say that it's when the fetus is, that it's the Yetzirah HaVlad 40 days later. There's no neshama until 40 days later. And this is what the Maharal said, right? Only on the 40th day does our body get a neshama. So Antoninus says back to Rebbe, impossible, can't be. Just like a piece of meat, if it's not salted, can't last a significant amount of time, how could the physical body of a person last without a neshama? How could the physicality even come together and exist if there's no spirituality injected into that physicality? So Rebbe says, okay, you're probably right. It must be that the neshama is there right when the body is created. And brings a pasuk, Ben Pasuk and Eov to support him, and that's where the Gemara leaves off. So what's the obvious question, says Rav Yosef Engel, based on the Gur Aryeh? The Maharal already told us that the neshama is put in on the 40th day. Why is the Gemara and Rebbe agreeing to Antoninus to say that the neshama is put in at the beginning, on the first day, or towards the first day? It should be, says Rav Yosef Engel, all the way at the end, right? The whole thing we're saying so far is neshama at the end, neshama at the end, neshama on the 40th day. And this is the question that Rabbi Hartman quotes from Rav Yosef Engel. Now, I'm not sure if Rabbi Hartman is trying to answer it, but he says Ayin Shan. Now, I don't know if he means Ayin Shan in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, or Ayin Shan in the Beis Oser, but there is, the Maharal does give an answer to Rav Yosef Engel's question. The problem is, the Maharal never published, the Maharal never had the chance to publish his Chidushim on Gemara. His Chidushim on Gemara were never published in his lifetime. They were published much later, and the manuscript for them was not found until the middle of the 20th century. So Rav Yosef Engel never saw the Chidushim of the Maharal on Sanhedrin. So what does the Maharal say in his Chidushim on Sanhedrin? He asks essentially Rav Yosef Engel's question, but I hold that the neshama comes in at the end of 40 days. Why is Rebbe saying the neshama should be at the beginning of the 40 days of creation? So the Maharal says as follows. He says that there's no neshama on the first day of inception because there's nothing to maintain it. But he says, there is potential. When I know that a neshama is going to be in the body in 40 days from now, that potential instills a sense of ruchnius and spirituality into the body. And this is the yisod we want to build on. That there is potential in a person's body for what is going to be. So let's look back at our questions. Originally we asked, how come when it comes to Kabbalah HaTorah, the 40 days of Elul, why are we looking at the end? Everything good happened on Rosh Chodesh Elul. What's happening the rest of Elul? So based on this Maharal, we'll say that we want to look towards our potential at the end. At the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Elul, it's good. But what about Yom Kippur? Really, our goal is to lead up to Yom Kippur. And says the Maharal, right now on day one A person has the ability to see forward and look at what they're going to be. Why are we waiting till Yom Kippur to have that amazing davening? Right now, Rosh Chodesh Elul, says the Maharal, when you see what's going to be at the end, you know you're going to have a great Yom Kippur, start now. You already have the potential now to be the Malach that we want to be on Yom Kippur. And when it comes to Kabbalah HaTorah, so why is it that the Gemara is comparing receiving the Torah to creating the body? Because just like when the body gets the neshama, we look at what the body is going to attain in the future. Even though right now there's nothing going, and we see that the neshama is going to come in the 40th day, but right now when we look at the Vlad, we see of what's going to be coming into the future, of what the body can attain and the level we can grow to. And therefore, this fits all together with the potential of what a person is going to be and what a person can attain. The Maharal repeats this yisod in a lot of places. He says that the beginning, he says this in the Gevuras Hashem, that a person is like a tree, right? The roots have everything in the bottom and the leaves spread out, and the roots don't have any fruit right now, right? What's so great about the roots? They haven't brought anything forward. They haven't brought anything to the world. What's so great about the roots of a tree? Says the Maharal, no. The roots are going to give off fruit in the future. And therefore, we look to the roots of the tree. We praise the roots of the tree for what the potential is going to be in the future. Look to the future and see what you want to be. See what you want to attain. Look at the person you want to be. Come Yom Kippur, come Rosh Chodesh, come the end of Elul, and be that person now. What are we waiting for? Why do we need to have a whole Musar Shmuz and a shofar blowing for the next 30 days and through Aser Shmei Tshuva? Let's get started now, says the Maharal. Now is the time to be the people that we really want to be in the future. The minug of the Bali Musar has been to make kabbalos during this period, to make a person takes on upon himself certain things. And what we want to discuss for the remaining time is the idea of kabbalos. How can we be who we want to be on Yom Kippur now? And how can we attain and look into the future and see the potential of what we want to have in Ruchnius in 40 days from now, but starting right now? How can we push ourselves over the edge to get to that status already at the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Elul? And I want to point out just a few ideas what the Bali Musar have to say about making kabbalos, taking something on, the importance of taking something on, and what we can learn about taking something on. Rosh Shalom Shwadron, who was the Maggid of Yerushalayim, so his Rebbe was Rav Elia Lopian. And Rav Elia Lopian, who had a tremendous amount of influence on him, and he was very, very close to him. He actually wrote the essays of Lev Eliyahu. Rav Elia Lopian's essays were written by Rosh Shalom Shwadron, and Rosh Shalom Shwadron wrote the whole introduction to Lev Eliyahu, telling all the stories about Rav Elia Lopian. So he writes as follows. He says that one Rosh Chodesh Elul, he was really excited to make his kabbalos. He was going to daven better, make brachos better. He was going to be honor his parents better. All these types of things, and he has a huge list. He unfolds the list and it goes down to his feet, like in the cartoons, and he sees what's going on in his list, and he goes to his Rebbe after davening, and he says, these are my kabbalos. These are the things I want to work on for the upcoming Elul Aser Shmei Tshuva. So Rav Elia Lopian looks at the list, and he says, okay, cut out the first 95%, cut that, and then come back to me and work on the rest. So Shalom Shadron says, you always want me to grow. You tell us to push, to go beyond our boundaries, to do more than we could ever achieve. Look at all the things I want to grow in. I want to daven longer. I want to think about Hashem's name during benching better. I want to make sure I don't zone out, by Slach Lanu and Shon Esrei. All these things that we stumble with all the time, I want to get better at them. And you're telling me, no, cut 95% of the list. So El Lopian looks him in the eye and says, you need to do something that is attainable. He says that if you take on too much, you'll end up doing nothing. Utilize your potential without going beyond your capacity. So stage one in making a Kabbalah, something we want to work on during Elul, is make sure it is doable. Make sure it's not crazy. It's not going to be, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. That's impossible. You're going to speak Lashon Hara during Elul. I'm not giving you a bracha that you will speak Lashon Hara. Just saying that you're going to speak Lashon Hara during Elul. It's going to happen. So you need to think something that is attainable, something that is reasonable. We'll come up with the suggestions at the end. But the first thing is, don't think of something crazy. It needs to be also not too many things. Two or three things on a list is a good start. One thing is a good start. But don't make it something that is not attainable, that's going to go beyond your capacity. Rav Yehoshua Tzvi Shapiro was a tzaddik who lived in Yerushalayim at the end of the 19th century. He was a Talmud of Rav Moshe Zilberger, who was one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim at that time, with the old Yeshuv in Yerushalayim. And for us, to put in context, he was the Rebbe of Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap. Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap was the grandfather of Zvulun Charlap, who was the head of Ritz in YU. And Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap was also very famous for being the Talmud of Rav Kook. Very, very close to Rav Kook. Before Rav Kook came to Eretz Yisrael, he was a Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehoshua Shapiro. So Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap wrote a biography of his first Rebbe. It's called the Tzvi Letzadik. And he writes there as follows. He says that Rav Tzvi Yehoshua would write down his Kabbalos from Elul and keep them, so that next year he could look back and see if he kept and guarded those Kabbalos. So step number two is, write your Kabbalah down. If you had a pen and paper right now, I would tell you to pull it out right now and write something down. Because when you walk out of here, there's a good chance you're going to forget. Write something down. Start making a list, 3, 4, 5 things, and you'll whittle it down to the things that you can do. But start writing your Kabbalahs down. Keep them in your pocketbook, in a wallet, in a shirt, somewhere where you see it every morning inside your sitter, someplace where you can always see that Kabbalah and remember it, and jog your memory, and remember it again. So step number two is write a Kabbalah down, and look at it throughout the year. Are you keeping up with that Kabbalah? Are you really falling off the track? Do you need some chizuk in that area? But if you don't write it down, you're not going to be able to reference it back. And this actually finds an earlier makor in the Chida. The Chida wrote, they say, over 100 svarim. Each sefer was unique. It wasn't just he rehashed Chidushim. Each sefer he wrote was individually unique. There was almost nothing like it. Maybe Rav Shlomo Kluger was similar in being as writing as much as the Chida, but the Chida wrote a tremendous amount. He wrote on Shulchan Aruch. The Machzik Bracha is one of his important svarim on Shulchan Aruch. And he writes in Orach Ayim Tuf Reish Gimel. He says that he saw such practices from Anshei Maisa. He says, Ra'isi Anshei Maisa to Bisbodesom B'yamei Tshuva. They would write during the days of Tshuva, Hayugomrim Al Eza Gedaros V'sayagim V'kosim B'sefer. They would make Gedarim, things to protect them in their Shmiras HaMitzvos, and they would write them in a book. Uloshana acheres mashkichim im also lahem shana b'mishmeres hatara umosifim. And they would look and see, do they keep it b'tara? Do they keep the things that they accepted upon themselves? Mikamakum yizar shali kaval of shum geder beneder penichasho rak yisnesh shehu bli srach neder. He says, if you do make the Kabbalah, at least make sure it's bli neder. It's not a neder. You want to make sure if you do mess up in your Kabbalah, it should be bli neder. Now, this is not necessarily agreed upon by everyone. Rav Dessler in the Mechzad of Malyahu in a few places cites the Gemara in the Darim on Daf Ches, which references the idea of making a neder in order to fulfill a mitzvah. And Rav Dessler seems to imply that it is making Kabbalah is a neder. But okay, say bli neder, whatever it is. But step number two seems to be that it should be written down to reference it. Rav Chaim Palagi, who was one of the Sephardi Gedolim, so he writes in his Nefesh Chaim in the Mareches Tuf O Samaches, and he cites the Chida, the whole lashon of the Chida. You should write it down, and he gives a different view of making a Kabbalah, different than we started out with. We started out by saying that what's the point of a Kabbalah? Push yourself where you want to be in the future now. Get to the future now and push yourself to what you want to be in any area of Shmiras HaMitzvos and Avodas Hashem. So Rav Chaim Palagi has a different approach. He says that making a Kabbalah is a form of tshuva me'ahava, a tshuva to Hashem out of love to Hashem, instead of fear from Hashem. We'll get back to Tshuva Me'ava in a second, though. So he says, "She'osu dvarim yiserim im hatshuva mitzvos ha'maisim tovim." So do something different in your mitzvos. Harav Chida b'Sefer Tzavari Shalal. He quotes the Chida in a Sefer Haftoros. For Rabbanim kishishai b'chol yam noraim b'chol afsaka gedola she'osim hayu mekabelim eiz a davar mitzvah. The gedolim would take something upon themselves as a mitzvah. Gether v'saig v'chasidus shloi behem mikodem, something they haven't done before. Ubitznai, as long as it's not a neder, the same lashon of the chida. But says Reb Chaim Falaji, it is a form of tshuva me'ava. Because when you take something new on, something you haven't done before, what you're saying to Hashem is, I love you. I love you so much, and I'd like to do something different for you, Hashem. I want to come close to you in a different way. Something that I haven't brought to the table before. Like buying something for someone you love. You're giving something Hashem, Kav Yachlan, in such a way, if we could say something like that, that you're giving something to Hashem that you were not able to give before. Just a few comments about Tshuva Me'ava. The Gemara in Yuma on Pei Vav Amud Bei says that Tshuva Me'ava takes averus that we do, and not only does it take them away, it turns them into zchuyos. It makes them into mitzvos in a sense. If I did something bad, Tshuva Me'ava, out of a love from Hashem, as opposed to doing tshuva because I'm afraid that Hashem is going to send a lightning bolt and that I am a sinner in the hands of an angry God. So, though that type of tshuva is okay, but tshuva me'av is the best. Now, they'll say to me, but the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, none of them bring any mention of tshuva me'av. It's true. It's Akash in the Shulchan Aruch, Akash in the Rambam. We have no mention in the poskim of tshuva me'av, but we don't find it in Rabbeinu Yonah either, but the Chassam Sofer brings it a lot in his drashos and his chidushim on the Torah. The Chassam Sofer even says that if a person eats a piece of treif, you ate a McDonald's hamburger, and a person does tshuva me'ava in Shemayim, they take that piece of tarfus that you ate and they make it as if you ate the korban Pesach b'tahara in Yerushalayim. That is the extent of tshuva me'ava. It can totally turn everything around. And I want to suggest a very interesting idea about tshuva me'ava, and you'll tell me if it fits in what the Mishnah Berurah is saying or not. The Mishnah Berurah, in his introduction to Elul and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, writes something very, very interesting. He says, quoting Elul and Ani L'Dodiva Dodi Li and all these things, and he says, why is tshuva so powerful? Why is it better during Elul? He says, because we're closer to Hashem, and Hashem is closer to us. This time is a time to be closer to Hashem. Ki be'elu arba'im yom ha'tshuva mikubeles lios libo karov el dodo b'tshuva. Because during these days, your heart is closer to Hashem, and Hashem is closer to you. Va'az dodo karov lo, and Hashem is therefore closer to you, because you are closer to Hashem. Lekabel tshuvaso me'ahava, to accept your tshuva during Elul out of love. There are two ways to read this line in the Mishnah Berurah. Either, all of the tshuva we do during Elul, Hashem loves us so He accepts it. But I'd like to present a chiddush in understanding the Mishnah Berurah. I'd like to say that the Mishnah Berurah says, Lekabel tshuvaso me'ahava means that any tshuva a person does during Elul, any place a person felt that he has messed up and he wants to come back to Hashem, whether he does that out of fear, because he thinks Hashem is going to strike him down, or out of guilt, or whatever the tshuva is coming from, Hashem turns it into tshuva me'ahava. Any tshuva during Elul, I think, says the Mishnah Berurah, that a person does, no matter where it comes from, no matter what part of your neshama it comes out of, it is automatically accepted as the highest form of tshuva. That doesn't happen during Cheshvan, or Kislev, or Teves, or Av, only during this time of Elul, any time you turn back to Hashem. Even if you're afraid that things aren't going well, a person is sick, so they want to do tshuva because, you know, they want to get better from it, or a person does tshuva because they want to help for a better parnasa, any tshuva you do, Hashem will accept out of love. I think that's a possible way to read the Mishnah Berurah. Just another idea about tshuva me'ava before we go back to Kabbalos, the Panim Yafos, the Hafla, was the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer had two Rebbeim, Rav Nachman Adler, who there's a lot to talk about Rav Nachman Adler, he's a very interesting character, and there's also the Hafla. So the Hafla, in his Panim Yafos on the Torah, in Rashi, so he says, so he says a very beautiful idea that I think we should keep in mind as we get closer to Rosh Hashanah. Try to keep this one in the back pocket when it comes to shofar blowing by Rosh Hashanah. He says that we know that we blow the shofar la'arve v'sasatan in order to confuse the satan. And the Panim Yafos is very, very bothered. Confuse the satan? What, the satan's an idiot? And he doesn't understand what's going on? What do you mean to confuse the satan? So the Panim Yafos says as follows. He says that we blow the shofar sitting down, standing up, during davening, before davening, all these different ways. Not because we think that we're going to confuse the satan, he doesn't understand what's going on, but rather because when you do a mitzvah beyond what is required, right, the Torah says you blow tefillah shofar and teruah, perhaps you three sets of three, so it gets us to 9, and then we have other reasons why it gets to 30, because we have a suffix, we don't know which one is which, but if you go well beyond of what you're supposed to do, that is a tshuva mi'ava. Meaning, when you make a Kabbalah to do something more than you have to do, Hashem loves that. So therefore, he says, when you blow the shofar a lot of times on Rosh Hashanah, you're doing a tshuva mi'ava. And since what you're doing is, all those averus you did during the year are now switching over to become zuchuyos. They're not just getting rid of the averus you did during the year, they're becoming mitzos. And the satan is sitting in the basin shamala, ready to prosecute the Jewish people. And what does he see? Like the Chassam Sofer says, all the times we ate the wrong thing, in front of his eyes, all those averos are becoming mitzvos. And all the times we spoke Lashon Hara, in front of his eyes, from our tshuva mi'ava, all those averos are becoming wonderful things we said about other people. And all the times we had a bad Shmoneh Esrei, so that is turning into a great Shmoneh Esrei, like that in Shemayim. And therefore, says the Hafla, the satan is going nuts. We're being mabalbal sasatan. We're messing him up. Why? Because he can't understand, wait, I came to court, I had all my papers, I'm prosecuting the Jewish people, and now everything is changing in front of me to become zuchuyos. And therefore, says the Hafla, we blow the shofar to kick in that tshuva mi'ava. And therefore, that's what messes up the satan. Because he can't understand why all of our averos are becoming mitzvos. That's the power of going beyond what a person has to do by making Kabbalah. Next advice is from Rav Dessler. It is not a secret. I'm not letting anything out of the bag over here. Rav Dessler actually writes about it in multiple places. Now, Rav Dessler didn't write the Mechta Melia. It was put together by his Talmidim. So in three places I could count, in at least the first volume of the Mechta Melia, Rav Dessler writes about his struggle with smoking. He smoked, which was not uncommon back then, in the 40s and the 50s. He smoked a lot, actually. And he knew that smoking was disgusting, and he knew that people were being to say that it was unhealthy, and he couldn't break it. He worked on it a lot, very, very hard. He most famously discusses it in his Nekudas HaBechira, where he discusses free choice, and he writes about his struggle and his free choice with smoking. Now, we don't know anything else about that from Rav Dessler. We don't know if he succeeded, if he didn't succeed, how he went about it. All we know is that he struggled with smoking. Rav Yitzhak Zilberstein, in one of his many svarim, called Tuvcha Yabiu, and Parshas B'Shalach, writes as follows. He said that he heard from one of the Talmidim Rav Dessler that Rav Dessler actually did have a way to beat his smoking issue. And he said one day in Panovich, one of the Bachrim walked into the yeshiva, and Rav Dessler, as usual, greeted him with a big smile, how's everything going? And in the course of the conversation, he said to the Bachar, oh, by the way, did you hear? I quit smoking. So the Bachar's like, okay, great, mazda. Very good. Okay, so he moves on. Next, Bachar comes to the base matters. Rav Dessler comes up to him, is schmoozing with him, how's everything going? Did you hear? I quit smoking. Okay, fine. This goes on, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 20, 30. 30 Talmidim. Rav Dessler has told half the base matters from Panovich by now that he stopped smoking. So they went to Rav Dessler and they said, okay, we got the point, you stop smoking. But like, what's going on? So Rav Dessler said as follows. He said, if a person wants to break a midah, a person wants to take a Kabbalah to grow, one of the ways to do that is with social pressure. Tell people you took something on. Okay, there's a place for tznius, I admit. There's a place to be tzanua, you don't have to tell everybody everything you've done. When it comes to certain things, if you want to make sure you carry out that Kabbalah after you have picked what it's going to be and written it down, tell your friends about your Kabbalah. Make a chabura. Make it among some people to tell each person their Kabbalah, and then each person will have to check in. Because if Let's say Rav Dessler told people that he stopped smoking, and he told the whole base medrash and panagrash that he stopped smoking, he's going to look pretty silly next Wednesday when he takes out a cigarette in front of the base medrash and starts smoking. Because now, half of Bnei Brak is going to know that Rav Dessler quit smoking, and he's going to look ridiculous. So sometimes it helps to use some social pressure. So tell people about your Kabbalah, get it around. Again, he doesn't need an ad in the Jewish newspaper, but it should be told to some people, so when they see you breaking that Kabbalah, you'll feel the pressure to get back on the horse and to do better about this issue. Next, Rabbi Chaim Friedlander, who is Rav Dessler's, one of his prime students, so he has a beautiful essay which he discusses making Kabbalos, and he discusses them by brachos. Just a beautiful idea about making Kabbalos on brachos. And he says that especially in Elul, our Kabbalos should be in the way we make brachos. And he says that after you say Baruch Atah, pause for half a second, 2 seconds, just to think that you are making a bracha and talking to Hashem. Because very often, we make brachos and we daven Shmoneh Esrei, we forget that we're talking to Hashem. You don't need to have kavanos in the Olamos Elyonim and to bring down, you know, the greatest secrets in Shemayim. But sometimes you just need to know that, oh, by the way, the last 5 minutes, you were talking to Hashem. So that is one of those things that he says to bring out. And he says you should emphasize the words of Hashem Elokeinu, to focus them in your thoughts. And then he says, by getting it into your outward actions, it can awaken your pneumius. So think about things. Think about the bracha, take time to put effort into the bracha. And he said, similar to what Eli Lopian said above, that the Kabbalah should push you toward greater heights, and it should be attainable. And when it comes to brachos, you should work on those brachos, he said, specifically that are scattered throughout the day. He said it's easier to work on a bracha like Shemoneh Esrei, where you sit down and you have time, but those brachos that we chap, that we grab out of the air, Nasha Yatzar, Nasha Hakol, whatever it is, those brachos that we don't think about, try to pull those brachos in and make them a little bit more contained, not as hefker, not as wild as they are throughout the day. And he says, by making your brachos better, you'll be more prepared when it comes to the brachos of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros on Rosh Hashanah itself. Next, Rabbi Saul Salanter did not write that much, but he wrote letters. And the letters are collected in the Or Yisrael, the 30 or so letters he wrote to his students, and the most famous, the Igeres HaMusar, his magnum opus where he lays out the role of Musar in a person's life. And he writes this in a few places, the following idea. He says that learning Torah has the power to heal the neshama of a person. In two ways, he says. One is that if you learn about a mitzvah, so you'll know, oh, by the way, I did not realize that mitzvah I was doing, or that avera I was doing, you know, had this punishment. And I'll be a little bit more sensitive to the mitzvah, and I'll do it better. But he says that when you learn about a halacha, that halacha cleanses your neshama in that area. Now, a person is struggling in Hilchot, a person doesn't make brachos. A person is not good about Kibud Av Aim. By learning Kibud Av Aim out of a sefer, and learning the halachos in that area, you can fix and perfect your neshama in that area of your life. And he repeats this in a few places. This is repeated by the Chazon Ish in his Emunah Bitachon, in the third parak, the seventh part, Gimel Zion, the same idea. That when you learn a halacha about a certain area, it fixes that area in your neshama and makes it better and more accessible to grow in that area. He talks about choshen mishpat, law, business law, and gaiva. And these things, if you learn about halachos dealing with gaiva, it'll make you more humble. If you learn about business law, it'll make you more sensitive and be able to be more careful naturally as a direct cause and effect, but also supernaturally. Within your neshama, it will perfect it and make it much better. The Chafetz Chaim in his Chovas HaShmira says, based on the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, that when a person learns Divrei Torah, then Hashem takes the Yetzer Hara regarding that mitzvah. If you learn Torah about that area, Hashem will take it away. So if you pick your Kabbalah to be Brachos, and you learn a little Hilchos Brachos every single day, Hashem is going to give you that push to overcome that boundary. You're not going to be alone. I think this whole idea is actually represented in the famous Breiser of Pinchas Ben Yair, which is the foundation of Mesillas Yesharim. What does Pinchas Ben Yair say? Torah, Mivir of the Day, Zrizus, Zahirus. That if a person learns Torah, it'll bring you to Zahirus. By learning Torah, you will be more careful in doing what is not the right thing. By learning Torah, whether as a cause and effect, or whether supernaturally, it will change you around. And therefore, if you want to strengthen that Kabbalah, and you want Hashem to be able to take your hand and walk you through that thing, whatever it is that you choose to pick to grow this coming Elul, learn halachos. Go to the local Svarim store, get a sefer about that halacha you want to grow in, and it can potentially make a world of difference when it comes to these areas. Now, so we've been through a bunch of things. We've discussed the Maharal, getting to the potential we want to be in the future. We've discussed advice that we've given, writing it down, not too much. It's a form of tshuva me'ahava, and learning Torah about those things. So what are some different ideas that a person can grow in? Just some things that come to my head that I jotted down before. Kavana, by the first pasuk of Shema, to bench from a bencher. Rav Shach is a very big fan of this Kabbalah, to bench from a bencher and not bench Baal Peh. To write down at the end of the day, to do a cheshbon ha-nefesh. That's a difficult one, to keep track of all that. To learn one halach every day, additionally to what you've been doing, to have kavana for the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. Not the whole thing, that's a very big avoda, but the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. To avoid talking politics, sports, or business at the Shabbos table. Asher Yatzar with kavana once a day. The first Asher Yatzar in the morning. The last Asher Yatzar before you go to bed. One Asher Yatzar a day with kavana. To say modim with kavana and to think about all the things Hashem does for us when we say modim, to have an extra area of learning Torah, to make sure a person always davens with a minyan, that's a reasonable Kabbalah that is not necessarily always so demanding, depending on the person's situation. Learning Hilchos Shabbos. What about that? Was all Beit Adam L'Makom. What about Beit Adam L'Chavero? Perhaps making a list of cholim to say Tehillim for them. To speak nice to a stranger throughout the day, a family. Sometimes we abuse family members more than we abuse strangers, unfortunately. You know, to work on how we speak with our closest family members, to help in shidduchim, to not to may a machzon lefi for 1 hour a day, not to speak lashon hara. Perhaps to do a chesed that nobody's aware of. Now, obviously, that gets into a problem with telling people about your Kabbalah. But, you know, to do a private, personal chesed that's just between you and nobody else. To work on a person's kas. To, especially if it comes to do with one person, to change relationship with one person you have, and to work on that one relationship throughout the year. Changing a single relationship with someone who you are not so close with is a huge avoda, but it's definitely worth a person's time. A thing that people are not careful about is standing up for the elderly, something that has become almost a meis mitzvah nowadays in our generation. And
they stand up for chasen kala, but when the 70-year-old grandma...
That's true. Standing up for chasen kala has pretty much no makor.
No makor.
And,
but when the 90-year-old grandmother calls by,
that's true.
Everyone just sits there.
So some definitely
not
something.
Anymore. Not everyone.
Definitely something to work on. But even by outside when everyone's at the chasana, so it's a little bit easier. But when it's just you in your home, or it's just by yourself in a store, so standing up for the elderly is definitely something very important and something that we lack in this generation. To compliment people. To be more giving of compliments to other people and to look for the positive, maybe make a count of how many compliments you give a day and to keep track of that, to give tzedakah, and perhaps as a penalty when a person does something wrong, you can make a tzedakah penalty. There's nothing wrong with giving tzedakah, obviously. And to just in general, to learn the halachos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. There are so many beautiful svarim from the shirim and the writings of Yitzhak Berkowitz and many other Talmidei Chachamim who are beginning to write on halachos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. There is so much to talk about the halachos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It's not just being nice and giving people a smile, but there is certain conduct that the Torah wants of us when it comes to interpersonal relationships. This list is more than enough for a lifetime of people to work on, but this is just ideas to pick one thing going forward, to make that chabura, to make that vad, and to get together with your friends, family if it is, and to talk about this Kabbalah and to share with other people, and then to, you know, to proceed. You're more than welcome to share it with whoever you want. You can share it with me. I won't tell anyone. We didn't check in on it, how's it going? But to take that Kabbalah and to really, again, to go back to the Maharal, to look at how you want to be different and then to see how you want to be on Erev Yom Kippur, and don't wait. Do it now. Be who you want to be 40 days from now, right now, and reach that potential, then that's what Elul is about. That's what the Mishnah Berurah was saying, that's what the Chayyadim was saying. It is an Eis Ratzo. It is a time to be who you want to be right now, and to not waste a moment. And it's a really a time of tremendous opportunity. I give us all a bracha that we should pick a good Kabbalos, and we should help each other, and we should Hashem should help us to fulfill them. And we stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Erev Yom Kippur. We should be the people who we dreamt of being for the next 40 days. Mm-hmm.